Hello, everybody, and welcome to the WDW Main Street Podcast. This podcast is being brought to you by Elite Vacation Homes. If you need a home for your next Disney or Universal vacation, contact Elite Vacation Homes at elitevacationhomes.com. Show's also being brought to you by American Tourist Travel. Let us book your next Disney vacation, Universal vacation, or any other vacation you can dream of at americantouristtravel.com. Show's also being brought to you by Scooter Vacations. If you need a scooter for Disney World, Universal Studios, or anywhere else in the Central Florida area, contact Scooter Vacations at scootervacations.com. And our last sponsor is David's Vacation Club Rentals. If you want to stay at the Boardwalk, the Yacht and Beach Club, the Wilderness Lodge, the Animal Kingdom, Old Key West, Saratoga, you know them all, guys. Contact David's Vacation Club Rentals at dvcrentals.com. And now on with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the WDW Main Street Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my good buddy, Dan. Hey, Dan, pull up a stool.
Hey, Doug, how you doing today?
I'm doing very well. And we're also joined by our good buddy, Bob Sycon. Hey, Bob, long time no talk. Welcome to the pub.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, being you've been away for so long. When you're on frequently, it costs too much to supply you. But being you've been away for a while, we'll buy tonight, right, Dan?
Absolutely. We miss our buddy Bob and everything he contributes to the show, so welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Ben.
Yeah, we called Bob when we first got on Skype, and the missus picked up. We were hoping to have her on tonight, but she bailed on us.
Nah, she's shy.
She bailed on us, but it was nice to hear her voice. So, how's things been going, Bob? All good?
Yeah, just busy like everybody else. I mean, it's been, just juggling a lot of balls and, we got a lot of personal stuff going on with our son getting married a couple weeks ago. He's in the middle of a move from Ohio to Nashville. So, I mean, it's just same, just life, right? Everybody's trying to cover all the bases with one player.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations on all that, and we wish him nothing but the best. We'll have a toast here at the pub for him to have a very happy marriage.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Congratulations to you and Mrs. All and WDW, as well as your son and new daughter-in-law.
Thanks.
So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to talk to Bob a little bit. He headed down. He only had one time at Food and Flower this year, and he's angry about it, Dan. And we don't even get there. I mean, I can't wait for the day when I'm only at the parks 10 or 15 times a year and I'm angry about it.
That's what I love about our Disney friends, Doug. I mean, most of them are locals or at least part-time locals. And, they seem to complain when they can't get down there multiple times in a month. And here we are still on the, annual vacation, maybe two if we're lucky in a given year. So it's nice to hear him complain.
Yeah. I can't go again.
I think the word you're looking for is spoiled.
Yeah, that did cross my mind.
And I could see you tantruming, too. I see you stomping your feet up and down that you can't go to the parks again. No, I can't go to Luna Bar and get my burger.
Actually, it was more like just a depressing, resigned resignation. I mean, things will kick back into gear. It's just been busy. Like I said, that's life.
Yeah, you only got five shrimp and grits this year. No, you didn't go back for seconds and thirds like I know you wanted to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was one of the favorite things that I had when I did go down there. I went down a couple. Well, it was actually opening weekend, so that would have been, a month and a half ago now. The festival does have another month to run or thereabouts. So it's timely still that we talk a little bit about 2016's Food and Garden Festival. The shrimp and stone ground grits, cilantro aside, Dennis,
yes,
still were outstanding. In fact, I did publish a mid-festival top 10 back in early March, and it was my number two item. And generally, the last couple of years, it has been ranked very high. The one thing that I have said in past years about shrimp and stone ground grits is that I wish they'd pull the tails off before they served the dish, and this year they did that, and it made it much easier to eat, of course, and the flavors are just phenomenal. In fact, if I do get down there before the festival closes, and I should have done this, you know, when I was there in March, is I'm going to ask them for the recipe, and just so I can at least understand what flavors go into the mixture with the shrimp and the sausage and the you know, the vegetables. It just has an outstanding flavor.
Yeah, I mean, that has that andouille sausage, I believe, in it, and it gives it a little bit of heat, not too much, but yeah, it's very flavorful. Whatever they put in that, you know, dressing or whatever you want to call it, yeah, it would be nice to get that recipe because those shrimp are delicious in that dish.
It sounds very good. I wish I was down there to actually have it with you, Bob. Maybe next year.
I was going to say, one of these days, you got to try to sneak down. My favorite dish of everything was another one that I had actually, and I'm not going to tell, Mrs. All and WDW and I joke that I was trying to take credit for giving Disney the ideas with the tails off the shrimp, but my favorite dish of all was the Gaoli beef bun at China at Lotus House. They actually served a Gaoli beef at the Food and Wine Festival last fall, and they served it on this little slider bun. And I made the comment back then that if they would have served it on the steamed bun that they traditionally use at the food festivals, that it would have been a much better dish. Well, here at the Food and Garden Festival, they did serve that beef on a steam bun, and I was absolutely right. It was just as good as the Mongolian beef that's won the Food and Wine Festival for me in past years. So that was actually my favorite thing that I had. Go ahead.
Well, before you go on, I'm just happy that you didn't choose a lamb or a venison dish as the overall winner. So the fact that it's a beef dish, I'm happy with that, you know, all by itself.
You know, and the closest I got to something exotic was shredded corned beef in the United Kingdom.
Ooh. Now, that sounds like a new dish this year because I don't recall that from previous years.
Yeah, it was a pear cider brined shredded corned beef. It was served by the United Kingdom in the Cider House. And I went into the festival just with a 10-item tasting menu in mind, so I only ranked 1 through 10. And this particular item, the pear cider brine shredded corned beef, was a controversial one between myself and Mrs. All and WDW, because when she read the description of it, she said, "Pear? Yuck!"
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking, to be honest with you.
Well, you're thinking along the right lines, because she was absolutely right. It was, you know, If I would describe shrimp and stone ground grits as a symphony of flavors, the pear cider brine shredded corned beef was a catastrophe. I just didn't really the corned beef and the pear cider, the sweetness of the pear cider, it just the taste just didn't mix for me. Now, I've talked to some of my readers and they really enjoyed it. And I guess it, you know, just goes to show, you know, I've always said the great thing about these food festivals is everybody's tastes are different. But for Mrs. All in WDW and I, that was, of the 10 that we tasted, that was number 10.
Not that good, huh?
No, not really. Okay, take it or leave it, and I'll leave it.
It sounds good. Like, I would like to try it because, I mean, it's like Dennis said, it wasn't on the menu before, so it's awesome to try it. But then you're sad when you do try something that isn't that good because you wish you'd have saved the room for something you know is good.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if we do get to go back, I think I have a decent idea what I'll try. I'll try another one of the beef buns, one of the shrimp and grits. The third item on my list, and this one came as a little bit of a surprise to me, was, and, you know, on this show and in print, I've always been very critical of two marketplaces in particular, Italy and Germany. But Germany at the Bauern market supplied a chicken fricassee, which Mrs. All in WDW said she could take or leave. But I just really enjoyed the flavor of it. It was kind of a mix. It was kind of like a sort of a chicken stew, but not as thick. And it just had a really good flavor. Of course, had chicken in it. Had some little noodles, some dumplings, some green beans, some peas, rice. I mean, it looked like the oddest medley of things.
It sounds like succotash. Succotash.
I mean, if you get a chance at some point, go to my website and in the top right in the search box, type chicken fricassee, and you should see the picture of it. It's I mean, it just, for me, it was quite good. I honestly would have it again.
Yeah, that's
and the Mrs. wouldn't, right?
No, she would probably let me. That's not one we would share. We shared the portion that we had in early March, but no, I'd be on my own on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, no, but it's nice to see that they introduced new dishes, and it sounds like one was a hit and one wasn't. I don't know if any of the other 10 that you tried this year were new dishes, but it is great that they're rotating some new things in with some of the old standbys that we've grown to love over the years.
Exactly. The pulled pig slider from the smokehouse in the American Adventure was back. I actually tried that twice, and one, the second time was better than the first. That was an old standby that had come back. Alternatively, from a new dish standpoint, they had a new marketplace, La Isla Fresca, which served a Jamaican braised beef and jerk spice chicken and jerk spice grouper. I passed on the grouper, as I've mentioned in the past.
Right.
It's just a little bit too strong of a taste for me, but I had the Jamaican braised beef and the jerk spice chicken. They were good, not great in the class of stone ground grits or the Chinese beef bun, but you know, it, like any other festival that Epcot runs, I mean, there's, you know, a variety of different tastes, and one of the exciting things, you know, for me, is watching people look through the menu and decide what it is they want to try, and it's you know, it's often a just a you know, wide variety or a different collection of things, and even if I don't sample something or get a picture of it, if I see somebody order something that I know I'm not going to have on my menu, I sort of like lurk around to take a peek just to see what it looks like. So.
Yeah.
It's you know, as is the Food and Wine Festival, the Flower and Garden Festival, or Food and Garden, as I like to call it, is a fun experience, and well, it does pretty well in the top in the WDW polls too.
Well, what I like about that festival is, and more and more people are catching on. I like it because the crowds aren't as bad. The booths aren't as bad. The lines aren't like 10, 15 deep. Pretty much all the booths you can walk up to and the kiosks and get service right away. There isn't as big of lines as Food and Wine. But I think a lot of the food is just as good because some of the favorites are there.
You're 100% correct. I mean, the crowds were lighter. There were very few times where I had to wait for more than maybe one or two people in front of me. In comparison to Food and Wine this past fall, which was completely off the hook as far as crowds were concerned, this was you know, almost dead empty.
Yeah. So sooner or later, though, people will catch on and they'll be just as crowded.
Like we keep saying, Doug, they'll just combine it. It'll just be one big festival running from spring through the fall, winter season.
Oh, there's going to be Christmas kiosks. Don't. That's coming sooner than later.
Well, my wife and I have talked about that often. I mean, it's a unique thing, and you know, I wouldn't recommend that they have, you know, a dozen booths open year round. Although I think that it would be
a neat
experience,
Bobby.
But I would recommend, you know, maybe two or three or four sprinkled liberally around World Showcase just to add to the food offerings.
Absolutely, because you could have a lot of Christmas specials for that time of year.
Well, even if it's not Christmas, though, I mean, like, year-round. I mean, you could actually rotate different countries through these three or four marketplaces that stay open year-round that might not appear at the Food and Garden Festival or at Food and Wine in the fall. I mean, different cuisines and countries that we've not seen before that you know, who knows, might be extremely popular and then can make it into one of the bigger festivals later. I think that there's enough of an attraction to it that, and enough space in World Showcase that...
You're right. And what I'd like to see them do, Bob, on top of that, nice marketplace would be, and I think it would be perfect way to advertise, like, how about maybe some of the marketplaces become Norcosi's or California Grill, or and offer some of the offerings from some of the hotel restaurants, so you can get a taste of it. Maybe you'll book a dinner over there.
That's an excellent idea as well. I mean, think about Canada Food and Wine. I mean, what do they serve? They serve Le Cellier's Filet Mignon. So,
exactly.
So I agree with that. That's a great idea. And furthermore, how about some of the restaurants that you might find in Disneyland or on the Disney Cruise Line? Things that people talk about.
You have Remy or whatever there.
Exactly. So same type of thing. Try to drum up.
No, I was just going to say they kind of do that too with the food trucks, because they have one of the trucks, I believe, is from California Adventure, or one of the parks out on the West Coast. So they've kind of taken that. I think that having the booths there, like you guys were saying, would also give the opportunity for folks that can't travel in the spring and the fall, that might only get to go in the summer when the festival's typically on running. It would give them a chance to experience, you know, at least a couple of offerings of, or get a flavor, no pun intended, of what Flower and Garden and Food and Wine is all about.
Yeah, like if you had Jiko, you could have some of the African wines in that marketplace, the buttered chicken you like, Bob, you know what I'm saying? Different things like that, man, this is really good. I'm going to go to Jiko on my next trip. It would kind of, or the Boathouse, or like right now with all them new restaurants open up at Disney Springs, it would be an awesome advertisement to have the chance to make you even want to go more.
In fact, it's funny you said buttered chicken, Doug, because I'm 99% sure that's one of the dishes they offer on the Animal Kingdom food truck at the Springs down there, the buttered chicken.
Exactly, and that's going to get you to go over to Jiko and even want the whole dish.
Right, absolutely.
So, and commenting on these restaurants, Bob, I got to give you compliments. The two of your articles on It's All in WDW are really good. One, you talked about this really good looking guy. I think his name is Doug. You were saying what a great job he did recommending you the Yak and Yeti, and that was a great article. But all kidding aside, thank you so much. It was kind words that you wrote about me. And
You're
then
welcome.
The Fulton's Crab House article you did. I really enjoyed reading both of them.
Yeah, I thank you very much. I appreciate that. The Yak and Yeti had actually been sitting in my files for a month or two.
It took you
Mary
that long to bring it out to want to actually compliment me. That's what it was about. It was hard for you to do it, right?
Well, I had to wait until you missed me a little bit.
Okay.
I've been so busy, right? And then I took up a lot of time running the Magic Kingdom poll and then the WDW poll right on top of it, and actually ran that poll earlier than normal because we had the wedding for Final Four weekend. At the end of the day, it was a day, one of those days in Animal Kingdom. I think it was the one we went there. It was really, really cold because I had written an article prior to that, a couple of days prior to that, about the Bloody Marys that we used to warm us up at Delmar. We walked into Yak and Yeti. We were trying to figure out what we wanted to eat, and we just decided to sit at the bar, which we had done before. And we decided we were just going to experience a couple appetizers, and the firecracker shrimp were outstanding. Yeah, the ahi tuna nachos, they were good, but I would have subbed the ahi tuna out for the firecracker shrimp. I thought that would have made it a much better dish, at least for my palate. And then, of course, you know, we don't tend to order dessert, and I kind of had to twist Mrs. All and WDW's arm to order the fried wontons, and I said, look, I cannot escape this place and print it without getting fried wontons, or Doug's going to jump in a car and drive to Atlanta. So we did it. They were very good. They were very reminiscent for us. This is a restaurant back in Ohio, our old Ohio days when we lived in Cleveland. But we had this neighborhood pub we would go to, and they used to serve basically a cheesecake egg roll, mm-hmm. which had the cheesecake filling inside the egg wonton roll, and then deep fried. And those were outstanding. This was very reminiscent of that. And fried cheesecake, she says they called it. Fulton's, that had a little special story, because we have a little local joint that we all hang out at from time to time. And one of the servers from that restaurant actually had just gotten a job at Fulton's a couple months before they closed for the refurbishment. So we happened to be walking through Disney Springs one day, and I said to Mrs. Allen WDW, let's stop in and see if she's there. And she was. And well, the meal we enjoyed was the lobster corn dogs, they called them. They were basically deep fried lobster on a skewer.
How were they? They looked pretty good. I've never seen a lobster corn dog before in my life.
And neither had I, although I had seen fried lobster before. And you know, Dennis is probably over there cringing. But they were very tasty. When they come in the little skewer with the little bite like that, and just go to All in WDW, go to the search box at the top, type in Fulton's, and it should take you to the article. But they were very tasty. There's a place here in Atlanta that actually serves as an appetizer an entire lobster tail, mm-hmm. battered and deep fried. And I've had that once, and I didn't enjoy it as much as I enjoyed these the skewers at Fulton's.
I would like to try them, but to me, me and my brothers, my brother and my godson, we fight like them two against me all the time. But me with my fish, anything fried, it like defeats the purpose of it. It just makes something that's supposed to be healthy for you very, very bad for you.
If you said to me, having had them now, do you want like a plate full of these lobster corn dogs on the skewer, battered, deep fried, or would you rather have some of the fish from Yorkshire County Fish Shop over in Epcot? I would pick Yorkshire. I mean, the it was just. It's just that much more of a better of a taste for me. And it's only fish as compared to the lobster, you know, obviously lobster being higher end. But really, for my taste, I would have had something simple if I was just going to have something deep fried like that.
Yeah, because my brother and all, he even gets mad at me, too, because like last weekend, me and Brenda, I got king crab legs and put them on the grill for us. And they're phenomenal. And me and my brother will fight even because him and my godson will dip them in a pound of butter. It's like, the crab meat is so good on its own. Why do you need to? You might as well just dip your shoestring in the butter and suck on it. I mean, in my opinion, you're ruining the taste of a great piece of fish. Does that make sense to you guys, though? Don't crabs stand on its own?
Yeah, and it has a delicate taste to begin with. So anything at all that you add to it, I mean, that's why a lot of times you'll see, or at least up here, and I'm sure elsewhere across the country, you know, when people do deep fry fish, the batter, it's all in the batter, and that you tend not to make it very spicy so that it complements the, you know, the fish or whatever you're deep frying. Because if you put too much in it, you're right, it just buries the taste of the seafood. And you're right, Doug, there could be elastic bands inside there for all you know, because you can't taste it.
No, absolutely. Do you, Bob, do you dip all your crab meat in butter a lot?
Guilty.
But if you get a good piece of crab, if you get real fresh, good crab, it's so darn sweet that when you dip it in the butter, it tastes, you don't even taste the sweetness of the crab. You get what I'm saying with that, don't you, Dan?
Oh, yeah. No, I do. But I will say, even up here, and, you know, I've been to Maryland and different places up and down the, you know, the Atlantic seacoast here. A lot of times they will come served with a big thing of, you know, butter or dipping butter or whatever. And it's, I don't know if you want to call it tradition or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But
it is.
It is quite common to, you know, dip seafood, whether it be fried, boiled, baked, whatever, into nice, you know, butter. So I can't say it's right or wrong, but I do agree with you that it will mask the flavor of the seafood.
Well, that's how I was brought up. Like, we would go to this seafood restaurant called Jacoby's, all you could eat crab legs, and they would give you the big barrel of butter. Like, they would give you this big stainless steel ball of butter for yourself. Right. And I would constantly dip it in the butter all the time. I thought that was the way you were supposed to, so I never knew any different. I never even ate a piece of crab without it. Well, all of a sudden, as I got in my late 20s, I started to just eat the crab by itself when I started cooking it myself, if you follow me, instead of ordering it out.
Right.
And I'm like, man, I will never eat butter with this again.
Right. Well, yeah, I guess it's kind of like, you know, some people love, let's just say, A1 steak sauce, but you could make the same argument.
Oh,
nice,
absolutely.
Steak
I'll beat
itself.
You up if you put that on a filet at my house.
Right. But right. You want to taste the meat. But I mean, some people prefer, you know, not prefer, but they enjoy A1 or any type of steak sauce, and they will put it on a, you know, $40 cut of meat. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's right or wrong. It's just personal preference, I guess.
Well, I'll say it's wrong, but it's okay.
Okay. If you go to Doug's house, bring your own steak sauce.
No, I cook my steaks. I cook my steaks with a crust on them. Like, I have a marinade that I put on them.
Right, right.
But you're not adding anything else. We'll have fighting words.
All right.
You won't want anything else, though. But I know you're guilty, Bob, and I'm not trying to do this to pick on you. I'm just saying, have you ever really ate the crab meat without the butter?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
But more generally, I'll dip it in butter, and I'm glad you didn't ask me whether I like A1 steak sauce.
And now, if A1 wants to become the official sponsor of Main Street,
yeah.
I'll change my opinion.
I'll listen to you.
We'll put it on the bar.
No conviction whatsoever.
It'll be the first thing you see. It'll be right next to the salt and pepper shakers here at the Main Street Pub.
All right.
No, but both those articles were really, really good, Bob.
Oh, thank you.
The lobster soup looked really good. The pictures you put up. So go over to It's All in WDW and read two restaurant reviews, and I think you'll enjoy both of them very much. The Yak and Yeti is very relaxing in there too. I like the atmosphere in there.
Yeah, it's one of the tags I put on the end of that article. I've been thinking about it's time maybe for me to do some favorite table service and favorite quick service polls. I haven't done them in like 2 or 3 years. And I looked at Animal Kingdom at the table service offerings, and, you know, I know that it's a limited amount of venues, but really the main ones are Tusker House, Yak and Yeti, and Rainforest Cafe. And when you look at that and say, well, they're so limited in opportunities to have a table service meal at Animal Kingdom, more often than not, people probably just make the decision that, okay, well, let's just go out of the park and, you know, go over to Animal Kingdom Lodge, for instance, for a lunch at Sanaa. I know Mrs. All in WDW and I have done that very thing. I don't underestimate Yak and Yeti. I mean, it's really good restaurant. We've enjoyed a couple meals there within the last year and a half or so, and would certainly recommend it and go back again.
Well, the great thing about that restaurant, different, and this is the way I'll put it for you guys, for our listeners. The good thing about Yak and Yeti is there will be something for everybody on the menu. Now, Jiko or Sanaa, there might not be. If you have picky eaters or whatever, you don't want to do that. Do you guys agree with me on that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Yak and Yeti menu is massive. I mean, that was one of the things that stood out to me when I went there last year. I mean, it was, you know, the thing is huge in size and almost, you know, the print on it goes from side to side, top to bottom. I mean, if you can't find something you like there, then you're just not eating.
Yeah, exactly, because you have hamburgers and everything else on there. So right. There is a broad – now, Jiko and Sanaa are really great restaurants, but there's not as many things on the – they're a little more taste. You got to have a certain – you can't be scared to try different things if you're going to either one of those restaurants. Right.
But I would argue, though, that if you go somewhere like Sanaa and you know, can get yourself to be a little bit more adventurous – and I'm not just talking about butter chicken, because that is phenomenal. I think anybody that's a picky eater would still like that.
Yeah.
You know, I think you'll be surprised. I wouldn't discount the fact that if you can, go a little bit outside your comfort zone, Sanaa's a phenomenal place to go. So is Boma. And Boma's probably got more traditional things that you could pick if you're a picky eater.
And me, out of the three, I like Jiko the best out of the three.
So I haven't been to Jiko, so I can't speak to that one.
And I think the other thing too, Doug, is some of the dishes are just have they have names that you're not familiar with. So you know, it may be a dish that if they called it something else, you'd jump on it. But because it's got an exotic name to it, or a name that, you know, is from another country or something, it might scare you away from it just because of the name.
I'm going to tell you something. The butter chicken for me, and I have to share this story. I had Mrs. All in WDW and our son there probably 4 years ago around Christmas time, and we were staying at Animal Kingdom Lodge. And it was a little chilly outside. We knew we had dinner over at Sanaa, so instead of walking from Jambo House to Kidani, we took the shuttle that goes between the two. And if it weren't for us doing that and the shuttle driver recommending the butter chicken, I'm almost certain I never would have tried it. And so I had it as, you know, we had if you haven't been there, folks, you can go to Sanaa and you can order. You'll have like a little bowl of rice and then a little bowl of one entree and a little bowl of another entree. So I ordered the butter chicken and I think maybe a beef. I'm not quite sure exactly what it was. And the butter chicken was just out of this world. And every time we've gone back since, I'll order that same trio. I'll get the wild rice and then I'll get two bowls of the butter chicken. It's just that good.
It's good stuff. All three of them restaurants are, you know, must-dos in my opinion. You can't go wrong with any of them. Like I've eaten at all three. I like, but I like Jiko the best. Jiko is the most upscale too of the three. It's the more of
it's a
two
signature
dining credits.
Yeah,
you know, it's a signature dining place. Yeah. So you got to try that, Bob. I highly recommend, especially with you guys being foodies. You got to go there one time. I haven't steered you wrong yet. You said in the article about Yak and Yeti.
Nope, you haven't steered me wrong yet.
And you guys will really like that. I'm looking forward to seeing Dennis get his butt over there, too.
Oh, I will.
The problem is too many places keep open. Now you even have Tiffin's opening up over at the Animal Kingdom. That's another one supposed to be really good.
Good problem to have. Yeah, I don't know, Bob, where you said you've been busy. We read the menu on one of our, either the last show or the show before, and there's some exotic things on there. It's quite the, it's not a, traditional, well, I shouldn't say traditional, but they've brought some African flair to that restaurant, at least by the sounds of the menu anyways.
Yeah, it's going to be signature there too, so it'll be inside the park's first signature dining restaurant.
Excellent. So, they're getting prepared for bigger crowds.
Yeah, and I was listening to, and I don't want to pick on them, but I was listening to WDW today at work, and they were asking, they did these percentages, like odds maker or something like that. And they said, what's the odds that the Animal Kingdom will become a full-day park? And I'm so tired of it, like after everything opens. It's like, dude, I'll argue with you that there's as much to do in that park than there is any other. I don't get the problem. Please, I beg of you, when Avatar Land opens and Rivers Light, stay the heck away. I don't want you there.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, Doug went over this the other day. He kind of feels like where he's been on board with the Animal Kingdom pretty much since it opened, that all the Johnny Come Lately shouldn't be able to go, or, you know, Doug should have the
They should have a 1 year suspension.
Yeah.
1 year suspension. Yeah. You know, I'd like, you know how when you go, when the Phillies, or not the Phillies, but any of your teams, like when the Phillies were in the World Series in 08. Dude, there was more Phillies jerseys and hats around from all these knuckleheads that never wore a sports hat in their life.
Right.
And they're buying this. It's just like, leave us alone. We don't want you now. That's how I feel about the Animal Kingdom now.
Actually, I kind of feel the opposite. I hope everybody flocks to Animal Kingdom, because then maybe I can get on the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train ride.
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't think you'll, once Star Wars Land opens and all that stuff, you're not going to have many problems on Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. And speaking of Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, let's get into your polls. Let's run over your top 25 real quick before we're doing next year's polls.
Okay.
So, you did your polls, and me and Dennis, we said we want to be on the election committee next year, so we could try to get these some of our rides a little better seating going on around here, Bob.
Oh, don't start with me now, Doug.
So
for those who don't follow our Twitter timelines, maybe listeners, you got to understand, I took so much grief from this guy. Because and I don't
oh,
remember
it wasn't
which,
that much.
I don't even remember which attraction it was. What was it? The train or American Adventure?
Oh, the
whatever. I don't know. The TTA.
So yeah, the TTA.
So the point that I made to him was, if they wanted a better seed, they should have done better in the Magic Kingdom tournament.
Yeah, well. I'm just saying, it was like what they were, the other three they were up against was like all three of them I liked. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like with me, dinosaurs is way too low. There's some things, and that's what we're here for. I'm not here to pick on you. Pick on your readers are the ones. I'm picking on them, not you.
Some of those readers are your listeners, by the way.
That's okay. That's what we do.
It seemed like, Bob, that, and I don't know if you noticed this as you were going along, it just seemed some of the brackets were just very... very early on in the competition, there were things that were you would have expected to make it further down. It seemed like they were front loaded, I guess, is the way I'd put it, if that makes any sense.
So just to give everybody the science that was behind the brackets.
Okay, let me get my pen and paper out.
It was as objective as I could possibly make it. So you got four parks. You had 8 attractions per park. So what I did was you had 1 through 8 for each park, and each one of the first round groups, and there were 8 first round groups, 8 times 4, of course, had one attraction from one of each park. So really what it came down to is that if you had an attraction like the TTA, that traditionally does really well in the polls, that came in with, I think they had a 7th seed coming into the first round, they got a crappy matchup. And that's really all it worked down to. I mean,
exactly. And I seen the matchup. That's why I was complaining, because the other three that were in it was like it was against 3 number one seeds. It didn't stand a chance.
Yeah, it was like against Tower of, I don't know. It was just crazy.
Tower of Terror, Soarin', and Spaceship Earth were all in the same division.
Right. It had no chance.
So if you take a look at the top 4. That finished in each one of the different park polls, you'll see that there was an odd mix of things. And I noticed that when I made them, and I actually had Mrs. All on WADW looking at them at one point and say, do these look off or, you know, very unfair in any particular group? And she said, they all look equally unfair. I mean, we got to keep in mind.
So, like, next year, how would it hurt, like, maybe next year if you did Splash Mountain, Haunted Mansion, Pirates, and Twilight would all be the 4 number one seeds in the brackets?
No, the num well, it depends on how they do in the park poll. So, for instance, Splash, because Splash won the Magic Kingdom tournament, was a number one seed. Haunted Mansion was a number two seed. So,
but that's so, but you're missing my point. I'm sorry. I got that from you. But my point is maybe we ought to combine all four parks and make the seeds from one to whatever. You understand what I'm saying? So there can be. Like Splash Mountain and Haunted Mansion should both be number one seeds overall, is what my point is, to try to shake it up a little bit instead of each park having their own. Because there's certain things that, like with everybody hating the Animal Kingdom, there's certain things that the only thing going to come out of there is Everest. So Dinosaur is going to get a bad flow anyway. You get what I'm saying, Bob? If we combined all four parks, and
well,
you could have
I don't know that I agree with that though, because you know Twilight Zone, Tower of Terror. Or excuse me, no, you said Everest. Everest and Kilimanjaro Safaris were 9 and 10. Well, Kilimanjaro was 9, Everest was 10. Kilimanjaro had won Animal Kingdom, Everest was second, and has won it, you know, in the past couple of years before. You have Festival of Lion King, you got Dinosaur, you got Kali River Rapids. I mean, eight of Animal Kingdom's attractions, their top eight went into the competition, and at least five, unless I'm missing one, are here in the top 25. So only three of them missed out in the bottom seven. So I think that, you know, the way that I do it is I keep it sort of like, it's almost like, let's use National Basketball Association, right?
Yeah.
You have the Eastern Conference top eight have their playoffs, and you have the Western Conference have their playoffs, and then they both meet in the end. So essentially what I do in the polls is I have a Epcot playoff, a Magic Kingdom playoff, a Animal Kingdom playoff, and then they all just sort of like get grouped together at the end.
Yeah, I get it. But in the NCAA, they do the four number one seeds. They could be from anywhere in the world. They don't do the conferences. They do it by the top 64 teams in the nation. And they figure out who the top four are, who the number two are.
I don't agree with the NCAA process, to be perfectly honest with you. In fact, I'm extremely critical of it. You have a small group of people who think they know everything about basketball.
That's who we are. That's why we want to do it this way.
Well, I don't agree with it. I think it's wrong. So I try to do it as objectively as possible. So each park winner was good enough or received enough support from the fans, from the readers, from your listeners to win their park poll. They deserve to be a number one seeds.
No, I hear you. I just, I'll read off the top 25. 25 was Fantasmic. 24 was Cali River Rapids. 23 was Muppets. 22 was Dinosaur. Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. I can't believe that finished that low with the crowd of people getting on it.
So let's stop there for a second. And there's another attraction that's not even on this top 25 that I think's in the same boat. So Seven Dwarfs Mine Train and Peter Pan. Unless you have a fast pass for either, you never get it. Yeah, exactly. So why do they finish low in this WDW poll? Why do they both finish low enough in the Magic Kingdom poll that they couldn't get out of the early rounds? I don't get it. I mean, both of those, the Seven Dwarfs.
It's kind of like.
It's a really popular ride. We're going to stand in line for an hour and a half to ride it. But I still like other things better. Now look at the top of the list. You almost always can walk onto Haunted Mansion. You can almost always walk onto Pirates of the Caribbean, and they're number two
and
number three.
Yeah, because it's cool. See, I think it's kind of the same thing as I'll put it this way: Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, because everybody picks on it. Like it's not long enough. Everybody has an opinion of why it's bad. I think it's the same thing it's the same thing as if you talk to 100 people, not one person will admit they're voting for Donald Trump, but for some reason he's winning in the polls. You understand what I'm saying? I think it's the same thing with these. It's not cool to say you like Peter Pan or you like Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, but you can't wait to get your fast pass for it. It's like they complain about it, but they're secretly going to go on it, if you understand what I'm saying. It's the same way. I mean, have you met anybody yet that's voting for Trump?
No one that'll admit it publicly or verbally.
But apparently there's a lot of people out there that like what he's saying. And it's the same thing with this. I don't think anybody admits they like Peter Pan or it, but they're getting their Fast Pass immediately for it.
Well, I like Peter Pan. I mean, I think it's a really neat ride. I mean, we don't go on it every time we go there, but more often than not, unless you have a Fast Pass, you're going to stand in line forever. And I've been able to get Fast Pass on very short notice for Peter Pan. You can't get Fast Pass for Seven Dwarfs Mine Train if you went with a $20 bill and tried to buy one.
Right. No, that's the deal.
So why it falls to 21, and it didn't do that well in the Magic Kingdom poll either, I can't answer. I mean,
because nobody wants to vote for it, because the cliche thing to do is to vote for Haunted or Pirates, because they're the two cool kids on the block, if you follow me.
But you know what? Haunted and Pirates do really well in this competition. And Pirates has never won it. I think Haunted did in the first year I ran it. This was the fourth year I ran it. But if you take a look at the former winners, and this is a point that I wanted to make, the Epcot International Food and Wine Festival has won this. It finished in 12th. Illuminations has won this. It finished in 14th. Soarin' won this. It finished in 6th. Now, maybe
I think Soarin' gets hurt because it's off right now and they're redoing it.
But and you'll remember the last time I was on the show was before I ran the Epcot poll, and I told you guys on the show that I had a little bit of a dilemma, because my rule has always been that if a attraction is down for refurbishment, it doesn't get included in the poll population. And I decided going into the Epcot poll that Soarin' was too noteworthy of an attraction to exclude. So I included it, which it obviously finished in the top 8 in the Epcot poll, or it wouldn't be in this tournament, and finished 6th here. And I asked the question, is it getting support because of the Soarin' that we know and love, or is it getting support because everybody's anxious to see what Soarin's going to become?
Soarin' know and love. I think, honestly, if you went by Fast Pass seats, like the four hardest rides to get for Fast Pass, I would say it would be Soarin', Toy Story Midway Mania, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, and probably Terror. They're probably the four hardest Fast Passes to get, and then Test Track.
I agree with you. And look, Toy Story finishes 11th. It won the Hollywood Studios poll for the first time, knocking off Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, which finished 4th.
And Twilight beat it anyway.
Yeah, see, and I think the other factor in these polls is
who's on when.
Well, it's that, no, well, I mean, the reader, the demographic, or the, and maybe that's the wrong word to describe it, but, you know, my readers, you know, turn over time. You know, it's a different group of people. You know, that come to the website. So each time that I run a poll, there's a little bit different of a result, because otherwise the same attraction would win this every year. And there's never been a repeat winner in this WDW poll. I've run it 4 times and 4 different attractions.
I agree with you a little bit with that too, but to be honest with you, Bob, and I hate that saying too, as bad as end of the day, but you could ask me the same question 5 days in a row, and I might change my mind 5 days in a row. Today it might be Splash Mountain. Tomorrow it might be Pirates. Next week it might be Haunted Mansion for me. Or then Test Track. And you understand what I'm saying? Because I think that has a lot to do with it too. Whatever the flavor of the day is, because we love all these rides like pretty close to equally. I mean, my top 10 Walt Disney World rides are, they're like my 10 kids, my favorites, if you follow me. It's hard to pick between them any given day. Do you agree with that, Dan?
Oh, absolutely. And I do agree with you that, you know, depending on what you're feeling on a particular day, or you woke up in a good mood or a bad mood, might change your answer to any one of these questions. So, if you ask me, hey, what did you answer to the question on last week's show on what your favorite attraction was? I mean, I might not even remember what I said on that day. I mean, that is true. So I think that puts a curveball on this. And I also think that, the reason that Seven Dwarfs Mine Train finishes so low, at least for me.
You don't have the belovedness behind it either.
Yeah, and that's true. I think that for me, I'm always going to have my sentimental favorites, and regardless of how great a new attraction is, Mine Train or you know, Kilimanjaro Safari, you know, I look at them as newer attractions, even though the Animal Kingdom has been open since, what, 98 or whatever. Yeah. You know, I'm still always going to go back, fall back on, for me, the Disney classics will always win out. Now, someone else may disagree with that, but that's the way I look at it.
I agree with you. The way I look at Mine Train is it don't have the following of the memories on it yet. Like, as you were speaking about Animal Kingdom, there are a lot of things there, but, like, Dinosaurs has memories to me because I took my godson down there, and that's one of the first thrill rides he went on when he was 8 years old. And it scared him, and I remember him getting off and talking all this smack, and then I put him right back on again, and we got in the seat, and he started to cry. And I'm like, well, you're not getting off. Right. And then he went on it again, and then after we got off again, he pumped out his chest, and it's a memory I'll have for the rest of my life. So I don't think the Mine Train has enough of these memories yet.
Right. I mean, it may need to, what do we call it, ferment for 10 years before it will, you know, have a chance to win
get
the
its
bracket.
Tenure in.
Yeah.
Get its tenure in.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
But Doug, you raise a really good point, and that is...
I usually a do, lot... don't I? Oh, did I say that out loud? God, Bob, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Dennis tells me that all the time.
Yeah.
You raise a really good point, truthfully, because you want to know what my biggest memory of Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is?
Is waiting in line.
Is waiting in a long line. And maybe that's why people aren't voting for it, because they realize that, if they're going to pick between that and Haunted Mansion, I might as well pick Haunted Mansion. I'm going to have to stand in a long line for Seven Dwarfs. So it's all subjective. Everybody vote something different. Let me ask you guys this question. So you see the list in front of you. As a tournament unfolds, I keep track of the votes. And, you know, when it comes to the top four, the four attractions that make the finale of any of the tournaments, however they finish in that top four is how they're ranked in the top four when the top 25 or what have you is published afterwards. But beyond those top four, so in this case from 5 to 25, they're ranked by the number of total votes they received in the tournament. So let me ask you this question. Of these attractions, and I will tell you it's in the top four, of course, because they had one extra round of voting, which attraction got the highest number of votes in the entire tournament?
I'd say Tower of Terror.
It's got to be one of the top four?
Yeah.
Well, it would be because they had one extra round.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's absolutely, positively Pirates of the Caribbean.
So by a 2-vote margin over Haunted Mansion, Pirates of the Caribbean had the highest number of votes.
See, can I give you my reasoning for this? I figured that Splash Mountain, Haunted Mansion, and Pirates would all take votes from each other.
Yeah.
And Twilight Zone Tower of Terror was in the Hollywood Studios bracket, and it would get more votes because of not having that competition. That's why I said that.
And see, I think that the top five.
Good job, Dennis.
Excellent. I think the top five is the biggest testimony I've seen in 4 years of running these polls of just how much more popular Magic Kingdom is versus the other parks, because four of the top five come from Magic Kingdom. And to your point, Doug, Twilight Zone really, in essence, didn't have a chance, because if you look at the final round votes, they had the least, obviously, of the final round, but by a large margin. They were 10 votes behind Pirates of the Caribbean. And then between Splash and Haunted Mansion, they were neck and neck most of the day, and Haunted Mansion just fell 2 votes short of Splash. So to me, as I watched this tournament unfold, it became just a testimony to just how much the, at least this current population of my readers, loves Magic Kingdom.
But I'd also say those three top rides have the most nostalgia and probably the most sentimental and the most memories of any of the rides in the whole list.
And that's what
in my opinion.
Yeah, and I was going to say Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, well, I guess Haunted Mansion too, for that matter, but it came from Disneyland as well, and I think that anybody
so did Splash.
That true. I think what anybody that's a true, true Disney fan that doesn't really care about thrill rides or roller coasters or how high or how big of a drop there is are always going to go for that classic Disney audio animatronic attraction that's rich in that type stuff, storytelling, which, you know, both Pirates and Haunted tell. Splash, even Splash as well. But I think Pirates most hits that right on the head, and that's why I think it got the most votes.
And it's the most family friendly of the three.
They lightened it up there when they changed some of the scenes around. Remember when pirates used to be chasing the women around and all that stuff?
Exactly, but my point is it's the least scary as far as taking your baby on or something like that. Of the other two, the Splash Mountain, you got to worry about the drop for certain ages and certain size. And Haunted Mansion, you got to take a certain kid in there. Right. You know, at least Pirates, pretty much everybody can go on and have a good time.
I think it's truly classic Disney, and that attraction fits that moniker.
See, for me, we go on Haunted Mansion almost every time we go to Magic Kingdom. Probably Pirates second to that. We very rarely go on Splash Mountain because, quite frankly, we don't want to get wet. Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, the number four attraction, I go on, but no one else in my family will. I have to go all the way down to number seven at Spaceship Earth before, if I were to look at this list in total and say, okay, that would be my number one attraction. If I had to look at them in order, then I'd be looking at Wishes, Kilimanjaro, probably skip all the way down to Food and Wine Festival, then skip to Illuminations. I mean, keep in mind, the reason I present these things as a top 10 or 15 or 25 list is because there's a lot of people out there that might find my site or, you know, you might recommend to my site. And, you know, people come to you or come to me and say, well, we're taking a trip to Walt Disney World for the first time. What attractions should we make sure not to miss?
Oh, absolutely. These are all great ones not to miss. And the only ones that, you know me, that I would add to this would be the American Adventure and the Railroad. I think it's a shame they're both missing.
Right. Well, I think that goes to show you just how many strong attractions that Disney parks have, that there are great things, attractions or what have you, that can't even make it onto the list because they got a depth of attractions, which that's what a lot of these other theme parks lack, I think. They might have a bigger blockbuster, if you will, or a more thrilling ride, but they don't have the depth of attractions that the Disney park does.
Like, that shocks me to no end, and not being smart, because I like the ride, and I go on it all the time. But it kills me that Living with the Land is on there, and the Railroad or American Adventure is not.
But Living with the Land, I think, I can look this up while we're talking, but I think Living with the Land actually did better than American Adventure and the Epcot Attractions poll. I'm calling it up right now.
But I believe it. I can't believe
that people voted that way is what you're saying.
I mean, exactly. Like, I mean, I at my work the past couple weeks, and, you know, you guys know I'm not crying. I'm getting through it. But I put on American Adventure, Hall of Presidents. I can't believe Hall of Presidents ain't on here. Hall of Presidents, Carousel of Progress. I put them on my iPhone and listen to them, and that what gets me through, and Illuminations. Will get me through days, if you understand what I'm saying, listening to them at the end of the day to get me that last hour and a half. I'll put these attractions on my, because I can do the YouTube audio, and I'll listen to the complete attraction.
Right.
And I can't believe none of them are on here. Carousel of Progress, not on here.
Well, in the case of Living with the Land in the Epcot competition, it finished sixth, where the American Adventure finished eighth, so it barely made it into this poll for WDW. The Hall of Presidents didn't even make the Magic Kingdom top 15, and Carousel of Progress didn't make the top. Oh no, it was number 14 in the top 15.
Yeah, see, like, I mean, I don't know how, especially if. The American Adventure, not to love that ride is, like, to me, anti-American. It really is. I mean, it's the most inspirational thing to see where we came from. But you'll want to go see a pick a tomato off a tree. But see a pumpkin grow upside down. I don't get it.
But think of why somebody might make that decision. Not to, you know, be difficult, but I really think this is a legit frame of reference. We've seen American Adventure.
I've seen Hall a pumpkin of... hang upside down.
Well, but let me finish. So we've seen American Adventure. We've seen Hall of Presidents. Both of those shows take an investment in time in, one, waiting for the show to start if you've just happened to arrive at the wrong time. So you could have a lengthy wait there. And then it's a lengthy presentation. If you're in the land pavilion, which, by the way, has not much in it right now, but if you're in the land pavilion, it's a pretty quick attraction. You know, you don't have to wait in line. You ride through it really quickly. But if you're presented with a selection of four or six or eight attractions, and you're told to pick between those, and you know that you're picking between something that's going to be, you know, a half hour investment versus something that you're going to get through in a couple minutes, that may be what your frame of reference is. I'm not going to pick the long one because I know more often than not, I'm going to pass it by. Doug, I'm just being honest with you. When Mary and I are walking through World Showcase, I'll ask her, do you want to go in the American Adventure? And she'll say, no, I've done that already.
Okay, but my point of it is, you've done it already, but to say that the show, I'm not talking about the time or investment. I'm sitting here clicking a button, and if I'm sitting here saying, that would be like me saying, well, The Godfather's 6 hours long, and Weekend at Bernie's is an hour and a half. I'm going to watch Weekend at Bernie's. I'm not going to invest my – I might not have the time to watch it today, but if you ask me which movie's better, I'm going to tell you 10 out of 10, it's The Godfather. I'm sitting at the computer, and I'm thinking about my times, and if somebody in their right mind tells you that Living with the Land is a better show than The American Adventure, they're out of their mind, in my opinion.
Well, then I can only... Well,
Dennis, then... out of the two, what do you think's a better show?
Oh, American Adventure, without a doubt. Without a doubt. But it, you know...
But that's what I mean, though. Why doesn't it get the support, then? That's the same theory I use with Seven Dwarfs. There's long lines, but it doesn't do well in the... finished eighth in the Magic Kingdom poll. I mean, it's the same thing. I'm sorry I interrupted, Dennis, but at the end of the day, that's when I sit. See, I've got a unique perspective on these things in comparison to the two of you and to the readers and the listeners. I mean, for them, they're going on and they're most likely, you know, voting and then just coming back the next day to see what the results were. I come back repeatedly throughout the day and I watch the competition. Because I want to see, you know, who's close, who isn't. Quite frankly, I also want to get an idea of if there's any particular attractions running away with it, because my brain's already thinking about what I'm going to write for the next day. So I'll watch these competitions and I'll look at Seven Dwarves or American Adventure. I look at American Adventure and the Railroad and I see them doing poorly in the polls. And you know what the first thing I think of is? Oh, great, Jake, great. I got to listen to Doug complain about it.
Because there you go.
So it's no, I'm just joking. But it's really interesting to watch, and I literally look at these things and just shake my head and say, "Really? That one's going to win?" I mean, so
Yeah, and I agree with you on some things, but like for me, I don't get how Cali River Rapids beats Peter Pan, let alone American Adventure or the Railroad. I mean, if I never had to go on Cali River Rapids again, it wouldn't be too soon.
Well, that's also where I'll admit that the matchups are going to hurt you. I mean, I heard that comment as we went through this.
Do a poll. Cali River Rapids, American Adventure, the Walt Disney World Railroad, and Living with the Land, and see who wins.
Yeah, and I also think, and this came up last time we dissected one of these polls, and Bob, I somewhat forget what your answer was, but hopefully you can refresh my and our memory. I think a lot of it has to do with the demographics, too. I mean, you know, do we know what the average age of the voter is on these? Like, if it was a bunch of 18-year-old kids taking the poll,
Twilight Zone.
Yeah, as opposed to, you know, 50-some-odd year-old men and women, you're going to get a totally different result because, you know, like it or not, you know, most of the youth, I shouldn't stereotype like this, I won't do that, but, you know, they're going to go for the thrilling stuff, you know what I mean? And they don't respect or they don't really care about history or
I don't have an idea of the demographics. I can't see any of that in the polls, but what I will tell you is this, and I think you're spot on with your point, Dennis, is that demographic is really important. If it's people of our generation that or maybe not Doug since he's in his late 20s, but yes. If it's people of our generation, then things like Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean will float to the top, and that's what we see often in these polls. If it's a younger demographic, you're going to see the thrill rides like Rock and Roller Coaster or Expedition Everest or Twilight Zone that'll slide to the higher end of the list. You know, it's hard to say. I'm guessing that the demographic is a reasonable mix because you have Twilight Zone showing up top. Big Thunder Mountain Railroad is still a coaster, even though it's more mild in nature. You know, Soarin is meant to be a bit of a thrill ride. So it could be a little bit of mix of tradition and thrill. Right. When it comes to who shows up to vote.
Right. I mean, and I think that's why, I mean, you mentioned that the International Food and Wine Festival won one year. And you know, your site covers all of, you know, Disney World in general, but it is somewhat known as a foodie site as well, or primarily, I should say. So, you know, I think that might have skewed that a bit, that, you know, lots of your readers are probably in tune with food and food-related things, and they enjoy those things, so they're more apt to vote for something like that, where a straightforward theme park junkie would probably never vote for Food and Wine Festival in a million years.
No, I agree with that. Excuse me. And when Epcot, when the Food and Wine Festival did win, I think it was one of the times where I either had conversations with you guys or I was on one of the shows, you know, a couple of years back. And I, you know, I thought too, because of the amount of coverage that I do of Food and Wine, that did affect the results a little bit. But then you'll also remember in the last couple of years, I've made the comment that I think that the Food and Wine progressively over the last couple of years has lost a little bit of interest. And my main gauge for saying that up to this past fall, where it was, like I said earlier, just, you know, mind-boggling crowds, is that it's progressively slid down this list.
Well, I think it's a double-edged sword. It's one of those things where it's gotten so big that even it's more popular than ever, but it's PO-ing more people. So they're coming home with a bad taste in their mouth because of the crowds. It's not their little their own little thing anymore, if you understand what I'm saying. It's everybody's.
It's
thing.
Gone yeah. mainstream, so even, instead of this yes. cute little sideshow that it used to be.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'll argue there's other things that, like, I can't believe, like, Mickey's PhilharMagic, I think, is so much better than Cali River Rapids. I think the Jungle Cruise. How's the Jungle Cruise not ahead of Living with the Land? If I had the choice to go on a boat ride, what would you choose, the Jungle Cruise or the Landmark? With the captains and everything. Why ain't the Great Movie Ride on here? There's certain things that I can't believe that aren't there.
Right.
That I would argue. And that's what I'm here for. I'm not picking on you, Bob.
Well, the Jungle Cruise finished 12th in the Magic Kingdom poll, so it didn't even get into this competition.
Yeah.
Only the top 8 from each park did. But, yeah. Doug, I'm starting to get the feeling that you don't like vegetables.
No, I love vegetables. I do. But I want the skippers back. It's like, I'm not learning anything anymore on that. I mean, that ride is going from, I still do it because it's nostalgic and it makes me happy because I remember when it used to be good, so I'll still go on it. But, like, I'd rather have the Three Caballeros over Living with the Land. What else can I name? It's a small ride I'd rather have over It's a Living with the Land. Carousel of Progress. I mean, I don't get it. Well, what's so great about Living with the Land anymore?
But again, it's that's what's interesting about these polls. And you've heard me say a billion times, I just said it earlier about Food and Garden. You know, everybody's tastes are different. I would argue the same thing's true here. I mean, I'm looking at the Epcot poll just to call out a comparison you made. Living with the Land finished 6th. The Grand Fiesta Tour, the Three Caballeros, finished 10th. So it didn't even get into this poll. I would argue, Nemo and Friends could have been in there. Things like Mission Space, which I know you guys don't like.
Oh, I love Mission. You're right.
Yeah,
I hate it.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. So, see, I know better.
He was thinking Spaceship Earth.
I do that all the time.
Just so you know, I know you guys better than you know you guys. Yeah. So Mission Space, which you guys don't like, finished in 11th. Figment finished in 9th. And I hear nothing but complaints about Figment. And it finished right behind your American Adventure.
Okay, I hear you with that. But I would like to see a poll. Because this is my argument about mixing the parks up. I would like to see a poll. Living with the Land, Carousel of Progress, Jungle Cruise, and what's another one? Mickey's Feel Her Magic, and see what place it comes in.
Well, if they each win their own parks polls or finish high enough to be in next year's WDW tournament, and you campaign for all of them...
No, but my point is, it's because it's a competition it's going against. There's so many rides at the Magic Kingdom that Living with the Land comes out of Epcot despite itself, because apparently nobody likes American Adventure or Three Caballeros or Figment. I mean, if you compare it to them, in some people's minds, I think they'll agree. But if you put Living with the Land at the Magic Kingdom, I think you could... I don't even think nobody would go on it.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I tried to be objective in setting up this WDW poll as I could, and I took the top eight in each park.
But I'm the boosters for Baylor.
But Doug, I could have looked at this and said, okay, well, Animal Kingdom's a half-day park, so I'm only going to take 4. Hollywood Studios a dying park, so I'm only going to take 2.
Bob, how much you love the Great Movie Ride? Now, tomorrow, if you had your choice, that's the other one you should put. Great Movie Ride or Living with the Land?
You asking or?
Yeah, I'd used to. Or to even be close?
Yeah.
Dennis, I'm trying to determine how worked up we want to get.
I'm not taking the cheese.
Yes. But, Bob, I mean, would it even be close for you?
No, I would pick Movie Ride, but I do both of them.
And even on this list, I've been trying to dust it off. I thought I can't find it. You know.
It did it. I have a very, very practical opinion on the whole thing. It didn't get the support. It finished in 5th in the Hollywood Studios poll, but for whatever reason, didn't get enough support in the WDW poll to make the top 25.
Yeah, well, I got it.
You're gonna make
like
some bumper stickers, Doug, and start campaigning for next year.
Yeah, well, I need to. Like I said, I want to be on the election committee next year.
In fact, here I'll describe it this way. So the highest vote getter in round one was Pirates of the Caribbean. It got 46 votes. Okay, great Movie Ride got 3 votes. So there were 3 people out there for whatever combination or matchup that it was in. And actually in round one I had 4 in each group, I believe, or maybe 8. I don't remember, but it got 3 votes. So in my mind, the practical opinion I have when I look at these things is, well, then it didn't get any support. I mean, it's tough to be a bug is something that probably everybody does when they go to Animal Kingdom.
Which I love. I mean, I can't even like put Living with the Land in the same breath.
It got 0 votes. 0.
I mean, Living with the Land might be, and I like Living with the Land because I always say bring back the skippers.
Right.
But Living with the Land might be the only ride I could let you fall asleep on.
Okay.
Because it wouldn't offend nobody but eventually.
Okay. It's tough to be a bug. Got 0 votes. Living with the Land got 13.
Wow.
But like I said, there's more competition in the other parks.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying that in the poll, in the particular groupings that were made, which were as objective as I could make them, it just didn't get any support. So when I look at that, I'll even take it down to my personal favorites. And I was talking about it a little bit earlier. If I'm going to pick an attraction that's like, you don't know you're in Disney until you do this attraction, it's probably Spaceship Earth.
But there's probably only three rides in Epcot that you can honestly say are 100% must-do.
But if you
Soarin', Test Track, and Spaceship Earth, in most people's opinion.
But if you ask me, my favorite attraction, it's a ride, okay? Not something like Food and Wine or Illuminations or Wishes. My favorite attraction in all the parks that I just love doing because I just think it's such a rush, it's Rock and Roller Coaster, and it finished 17th. Mm-hmm. So,
but at least it's on the list. I'm okay with that because it deserves to be.
I can hope I pick better attractions than you.
It deserves to be. I'm just saying to people, there are certain things that are left off that irk me. But I'll finish off the list so we're not on a three-hour tour because next year's list will be coming off. I'll read them again. Fantasmic was 25. Kelly River Rapids was 24. Muppet Vision, Dinosaur, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, 21. Epcot International, Flower and Garden Festival, 20. The Festival of the Lion King, 19. Tomorrowland Transit Authority, 18. Rock and Roller Coaster, 17. Space Mountain, 16. Living with the Land, 15. Illuminations, Reflection on Earth, 14. Test Track, 13. Epcot International Food and Wine Festival was 12. Toy Story Midway Mania was 11. Expedition Everest, 10. Kilimanjaro Safari, 9. Wishes Nighttime Spectacular, 8. Spaceship Earth 7, Soarin' 6, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad 5, The Twilight Zone Tower of Terror 4, Yo-Ho Yo-Ho number 3, Haunted Mansion number 2, and Splash Mountain came in 1. Which, the top 10, even as much as I hate Expedition Everest, I could see that being there.
Yep.
But Living with the Land, I just don't get it.
Well, that's okay. Next year we'll have the Rivers of Light will be number 1 in this poll.
No, it won't be. I bet you it'll be good. I bet it'll make it in there.
You think it'll be top 10?
I don't know. Again, because I don't think it'll have the sentimental
right.
value of Wishes or Illuminations. Like, I can't believe, as I like both, but I can't believe Wishes beat Illuminations.
Yeah.
That shocked me.
I mean, Magic Kingdom is so popular, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's part of the effect, Dennis. And I actually, it's been a number of years since I've done a nighttime spectacular poll, and I'm looking down the list here because I'm fairly certain that Wishes beat Illumination. Yes, favorite nighttime spectacular, Wishes, and I did that poll back in 2013. So it's a little bit dated, but Wishes definitely beat Illuminations.
And, I mean, it's the most attended theme park in the world, so that itself, I think, it gives it the upper hand.
And I love both, and that's like, I'm not picking on. I was just saying I'm shocked with that. The other thing I'm shocked with, and Cali River Rapids I have mentioned too, but as much as people piss and moan about Fantasmic getting into it, trying to see it, under your logic with the American Adventure and everything else, I think Fantasmic causes more crap than any other ride in the park.
I don't disagree with that. And actually, you know, I mentioned that if somebody asks you, you know, because like I said, who has enough time to make a list for everybody of what attractions you want to recommend to them if they're going on their first trip? Just take it from All in WDW's site and give them this top 25. And if you're like Doug and there's a particular attraction on the list you don't like, then just drop it off the list and give them a shorter list. Or, Doug, if you want to drop Living with the Land, I completely understand. Here, I'll give you attraction number 26 so that you can add it to the list. It's the American Adventure.
Exactly. Or, no, I'm not even saying it because it's mine, but and I get it. But I would say Jungle Cruise. I would say Mickey's PhilharMagic or Tough to Be a Bug. They're all great. They're all better than Living with the Land, in my opinion. And again, I don't want people write me because everybody knows I like the ride. I do it, but it's just, I don't get it. It's so vanilla, it's ridiculous anymore.
You know, I've been looking at Twitter as we've been talking here, and everybody is like freaking out that you don't like Living with the Land.
It ain't up yet. You're not getting me yet. We're not doing a live show here, dude. I'm tired, but not that tired. No, but Bob, all kidding aside, you do a wonderful job Thanks. With your polls. You do a great job on your website. I love all your food reviews. You write excellent articles. Yeah, you know, I don't. By knowing you, I can't believe you write that good. I'm shocked.
Wow.
No, that's, I'm just kidding,
hard.
Buddy.
That's,
but no, you do a
harsh
really good
stuff,
job.
Let me tell you.
You do it well. You're getting me mad with this American Adventure stuff.
Yeah.
It's a shame Malmstrom wasn't on the. Oh, did I say that out loud?
You know, I I just heard on one of your recent shows, I think you were talking about best attractions.
I'm glad to hear you're finally listening again.
Yeah, well, I mean, when Dennis is on, it's good. When it's you talking, I kind of turn the volume down. But I think it was the favorite nighttime attractions or favorite attractions at night. I think Maelstrom came up in that conversation too.
Yeah,
absolutely. I just pick on it. I love Maelstrom myself. I didn't have a problem with it. I just know it winds you up and gets you going. So you want to talk about sparking the flame?
Yeah, it doesn't. It no longer does it get me, excuse me, all wound up. You have to remember that there is something called the All-In WDW Hall of Fame. And the only member of the Hall of Fame to this point is Maelstrom.
Is Doug Davis? I thought I got my acceptance letter last month from you. Put me in the Hall of Fame.
Nope.
Nope, with the dead air.
No, dead air. I think I'm in shock because I'm trying to figure out how the letter got lost because it went to because I think I thought I sent it to Dennis.
Thanks, buddy. No, but you do a great job on your site, Bob. I suggest everybody go over and read your articles at It's All in WDW. We try to tweet them, retweet them as much as we can for you.
Thanks, I appreciate that. So it's www.allinwdw.com. You know, as the guy said, I try to post pretty much every meal that we have in Disney. I think I've got Skipper's Canteen hiding in my file folder somewhere. That's got
to
get published. I think I'm going
to
be making. We just spent a couple days in Animal Kingdom. I think I'm going to be heading over the monorail in Magic Kingdom way in a little bit. But we're going to make a brief stop, I hope, in Disney Springs tomorrow.
Okay, well, enjoy yourself. Let us know what you had to eat. We'll follow along on Twitter, and we'll tweet out whatever articles you write. And keep up the great work. Give the missus our best. Give your son our best and his new beautiful bride. And you guys all take care of yourself.
You as well.
You got anything? You anything else you want to say, Dan?
No, I'm good. It's fun talking some Disney tonight, and we'll see you all on the next show.
If you guys agree with us, please go over to iTunes and leave us a wonderful review. We'd really appreciate it. Check us out on Twitter at Bob, It's All in WDW, me and Dennis at Grumpy67 in Oak Manor, and you can find us both at WDW Main Street. Hope everybody has a great rest of your week. Talk to you guys later, and I'm buying tonight.
All right.
Bye-bye. Well, guys, that's going to be it. Me and Dan's going to hop off our stools, pay our tab, and get on out of here. This show is brought to you by our fine sponsors, American Tourist Travel. For all your travel needs, contact American Tourist Travel at 856-227-9200. If you need a nice home in the Central Florida area to go visit Disney, Universal, or any of the fine amusement parks, and you want to stay outside the parks, contact the Elite Vacation Homes at 888-510-6679. They have a home to fit any size family. If you need a scooter in the Central Florida area, contact Scooter Vacations at 855-939-7266. And if you want to rent a vacation club on Disney property, contact David's Vacation Club Rentals at 800-610-5791. And you can also find all of our fine sponsors at our website at www.magicalmainstreetmemories.com. And please, guys, go give us a review over on iTunes. That's going to be it. Thanks again, and thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.